This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast. Each week we preview and review the business and market news with Craig Earlham, Oanda Senior Market Analyst in London. And I'm delighted to say he joins us again. How are you doing?
I'm really good, mate. How are you?
Yes, been an interesting week. Lots going on geopolitically and, of course, at home in the UK. Should we start with the leadership contest? We're finally down to the final two. It has been like a weird version of the X Factor, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite like X Factor in that I didn't watch these debates any more than I watched those episodes, to be quite honest. Everything I've heard about them since suggests there was good reason for that. It sounds like they were extremely dull.
Isn't it your job to watch these debates, Craig? I'm very disappointed in
it's my job to know what's going on, but I don't have to watch every little boring inch of it. And let's be honest, a group of guys who've already said effectively before that they don't want to tarnish the Conservative Party in these debates, suggesting that they're actually going to go at each other's throats, which they didn't, and it was quite mundane, and everything I've read about it since.
I'm not sure, actually, you watching or reading the same thing that I was, because the BBC debate actually was quite fraught at times, lots of arguing and people talking over each other. Actually, it was pretty chaotic and not very well run. So, what about the markets, which is why we're here? In terms of those two, obviously we knew Boris Johnson was definitely going to be in the last two, but Jeremy Hunt, how do they feel about that, or does it make no difference at all?
The reports which we've had earlier in the week, which suggested that Boris was effectively going to lend some votes to Hunt in order to stop Gove getting in, is quite telling, really. I think Boris very much fancies his chances when it comes to taking on another Remainer, given how unsuccessful a previous Remainer was. What I saw earlier, that Hunt's being described as Theresa with trousers, which, I mean,
I think she wears trousers as well.
That was my first thought, to be quite honest. It seemed
I'm not sure about shoes, though. I don't know if she wears those shoes.
Maybe, who knows? But all I know is I kind of do agree with the sentiment, which is I don't think there's that much difference between Hunt and Theresa. Maybe he's got slightly more personality. Maybe he
touch
does,
and go, that one.
He does have a bit more business acumen.
He's better at communication, that's for sure.
Exactly. But ultimately, in terms of the actual strategy, he is a Remainer, reformed Leaver. He's very much not on the side of no deal, which makes the threat of no deal a little bit weak. He doesn't seem to have much of an idea of how he's going to change the deal enough to get this through Parliament, although he claims he does, but we've not really seen any details alluding to such. Everything we know about the Tory membership suggests that this could be an easy ride for Boris. Now, I know there's always surprises in these things, but he does seem to appeal to everything that they care about, including the fact that he is a Brexiteer, at least publicly. Anyway, and he is very open to no deal, although one thing I did learn from reading about these debates was that he very much didn't quite commit to it. He has effectively said he would absolutely do it, although it's not his preferred option, so maybe that's something. But either way, I think the pound's kind of priced in Boris at this point. It's been priced in for a little bit of time now. When he won that first contest, getting what, nearly half the votes, and now he's got around 52%, funnily enough, of the votes in this final round, I think it's all pretty much priced in. So I guess it's a case of where do we go from here and just what these tactics are going to be, assuming he does take the victory.
Certainly looks like it's going to be a coronation. As you said, anything can happen, and it is his to lose, really. And he certainly would have feared Michael Gove, who intellectually has a bit more rigour than Jeremy Hunt, and certainly would have challenged him on all these hustings that we're going to go and see. Well, you're not going to go and see it for sure. I don't think I am either. In the next month or so. But yes, it looks like it's nailed on. And obviously markets are looking at what happens next. Now, we were just discussing that off air, and we've gone on all sorts of journeys in that discussion in terms of election, extension, referendum, maybe not so much. What would markets like to happen?
Yeah, I feel like we're going to see a lot more of these diagrams now starting to come to the fore, where we say, if this doesn't happen, then this, and if this doesn't happen, then that. It's so unpredictable right now. Let's say Boris Johnson wins this race. He doesn't really have much time to actually renegotiate with the EU, and he hasn't fully committed to exiting on the 31st of October without a deal, if there isn't one on the table that can get through Parliament. What the most realistic thing that we see now is that he does request an extension, say to March next year, so a very short one. He sells it as, I've just not had enough time to actually renegotiate, and I think I can renegotiate that backstop and get this through and leave with a deal that everyone can get behind. So that gives him a few more months until the end of March. Can he convince the EU that the backstop isn't necessary and that there is a technological solution available to resolve the issue of the Northern Irish border? I'm not sure how that's possible. Theresa May, granted she's not the best negotiator in the world, clearly, but she failed to do so for 2 years to convince of that. That was with Brexiteers, even on her cabinet.
But she was a Remainer. They were never that keen on her doing the negotiations. At least they've got one of their own on their side now, so maybe they'll be a bit more malleable.
Yeah, you take the same deal, you rewrap it in better paper, exactly, and then you sell it back to the same people. That is a possibility. The question is, what if he can't do that by the 31st of March, assuming that that's when an extension would be agreed to? When we look at how Macron in particular approached the last extension, a number of them were in favour of a longer extension, maybe to the end of the year. He himself wasn't on board with this, so perhaps he would very much favour a short extension to the 31st of March as an example as well. And then it's a case of, what would you do then? Does Boris have the audacity to call an election and risk a Jeremy Corbyn government? There's now effectively four or five real parties vying for these votes, which would mean that the chances of a majority are far slimmer than they've been in the past, and that there's more chance of coalitions. It's really difficult to see how we now get to the point where we're exiting the EU without either A, somehow getting around government having an actual say in no deal, B, an election, or C, a referendum. And that's where I think we'll find ourselves back at the end of the 31st of March, looking at these same options again.
Okay, let's talk about some of the economics and the data that we've seen and is to come in the week. The Bank of England inflation report hearing is on Wednesday, but of course we did have that slight drop in inflation, which was perhaps a bit of a surprise.
A little bit of a surprise, but not enormously when we look at the trends going on across the world right now, the US and Europe included. So that wasn't necessarily a massive surprise. I think more interesting is the fact that we've just had the Bank of England rate decision, and the only real kicker in there was that they thought that markets were effectively not viewing things in the same way they were. The markets aren't as hawkish as they were. The Bank of England still seems to be of the impression that the next move is going to be a rate hike rather than a rate cut, which again very much goes against the trend that we're seeing elsewhere.
Or just stay the same,
which is what markets are actually expecting at this moment, at least for the next 12 months. But again, when you've got so much uncertainty, how do you say anything with any real certainty?
Amazing, isn't it? Because we did see a lot of people saying that there would definitely be a hike this year. Yeah, now that seems to have completely gone out the window.
Yeah, I mean, I was very much one of those who thought there could be a hike this year, but this was very much before we started hearing Fed talking about cutting interest rates and others talking about cutting interest rates, which effectively, if you're standing still, means your financial conditions are tightening because your currency by default is getting that little bit stronger and your rates by comparable are that little bit higher. So it also is a case of Brexit's not resolved. Brexit, it won't be resolved now until at least the 31st of October and probably beyond, and the Bank of England won't want to tighten interest rates when other central banks are cutting rates and when Brexit is unresolved. And that's why one of the reasons this slowdown is also why they lowered growth forecast for the second quarter from 0.2 to 0%.
Indeed, and we've got so many geopolitical issues at the moment. I'm sort of running out of numbers.
Let's just start with where they all centre, Trump.
Well, yes, mainly, although you can't blame Trump for Hong Kong, maybe. I know that's not something that we're going to discuss today, but there are, the Chinese...
It's very much a lingering issue, though.
That is a lingering issue, but let's start with oil and the problems with Iran at the moment, and oil is on the up. They look like they're going to exceed their enriched uranium limit under the 2015 deal. And we had an escalation in the Straits of Hormuz this week as well. So it's not looking too positive at the moment, is it?
No, especially when we look at, yesterday when the US drone was shot down by Iran, US claiming it was in international waters, Iran claiming it had entered their airspace and therefore deemed a threat. This kind of escalation isn't helpful.
Well, apparently Trump had some guys in the air who were ready to bomb some sites in Iran.
Exactly.
That would have been a complete game changer. We would be having a different conversation right now, wouldn't we?
Well, exactly. I mean, that is an enormous escalation from where we were even a week ago. And a week ago, we were talking about
that hasn't happened since the 80s.
No, this is what scares people with Trump's kind of techniques. And I know we haven't seen a lot of the negative ramifications of this more. The sterner approach to international affairs and foreign policy so far. tariffs on China, we haven't fully seen the effects of what that could do from a negative viewpoint yet. The approach to North Korea, which got North Korea to the table initially, but again, relations seem to be souring there. We have Xi in North Korea right now, and we've seen some comments from there. When this is where we start to see the negative side effects of this kind of approach, and the escalation that we've seen with Iran has been quite significant already. And if this continues to ramp up at this rate, then there is a real threat. And that's a real threat in an area of the world where it's already very volatile. But also, we do rely on that, as you've mentioned, the Strait of Hormuz, for the passage of around a fifth of all oil production on a daily basis. So it could really have a big impact on us all if this does continue to escalate. We start to see more ships being targeted in that region. We start having to look at ways to get around that. And then oil prices spike, and then it affects everyone at the pump.
And if we suddenly see three-digit oil way above what it is at the moment, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Well, we've seen recessions caused by oil price spikes before, and this is at a time when we're already seemingly very vulnerable. So there is clearly a bit of a risk there, and that must be playing in central bankers' positions as well. Because when you're a central banker and you're making these forecasts, you're not just making the forecast based on what is happening. You're weighing up the risks and vulnerabilities into your forecast as well, which is why these forecasts change so much. Which is why Brexit, for example, was so difficult to forecast, because you weigh up the risks and probabilities of things happening. That doesn't necessarily mean they are going to happen, and therefore your forecasts are going to become true. You're taking what we know now, you weigh it up, and then you decide what the outcome will be. But this is a major escalation, and oil prices finally spiked. I think it hasn't spiked as much as most people would have thought, based on what we've seen so far, because of this oversupply issue, US pumping at record rates, global demand slowing because of an economic slowdown. So we haven't seen the spike that we would have expected. And I think G20 next week could potentially provide that spike. I think Trump needs some good news. And I think if he can come to an agreement with Xi to restart talks, that will be the good news, which could give the markets an extra lift, give oil an extra lift as well, and reduce some global economic fears. So that's something that could cause a spike in the near term as well.
And we've got a rally at the moment. Is it sustainable?
I think that's the big question, because at the moment the rally is being effectively driven by central banks. The Fed making a massive U-turn from raising interest rates four times last year. Market's now pricing in two or three rate cuts this year. That's an enormous U-turn, and quite a rapid one at that. The ECB talking up stimulus, much to Trump's annoyance, as we saw on Twitter. And other central banks, RBA, RBNZ, cutting interest rates. We've seen it all already. So based on that, you would say the market could be the stock market run could be sustainable, especially if Trump and Xi can come to some form of agreement and ease economic concerns. I would say yes, only because I think the US, Trump needs a win right now. I don't think it's in either side's interest to really drag this out too much longer. When you look at the impact which we're now seeing on Huawei, for example, and the expectations for their phone sales and the impact abroad, I think it's very much in Xi's interest as well. I'd be surprised if something positive doesn't come out of that. How significant that is in the longer term, we'll have to wait and see, though.
Trump certainly needs it at the moment. He's just started his campaign for 2020. He needs a bit of good news. We've got Iran on the horizon. Of course, this is the president who promised that we wouldn't actually, or the West, or United States, wouldn't be going into the Middle East.
Yeah, exactly. We have seen in the past foreign policy can be a handy tool when approaching a presidential election for the incumbent president or prime minister. So this may actually rally the central nationalism, rally voters behind him, as long as the escalation isn't obviously too significant. But like I say, it is interesting with Trump, because in a week that he's told us that this is the best US economy ever, the envy of every other country, and also telling us that the central bank absolutely has to cut interest rates. They're very mixed messages that were coming. That suggests to me that he's desperate to send one message ahead of the election, but he's very much concerned about the prospect that things could take a turn at the worst time possible.
Can I go back a bit, Craig? And we didn't actually mention the Mansion House speech with Philip Hammond and Mark Carney in action. And of course, it was probably, almost definitely, both of those characters last ever Mansion House speeches. Should we have a sort of a short review of the career of at least one of those gentlemen? Because it's the end of an era, really, isn't it?
It is. When you look at someone like Mark Carney, I think he is not going to be sad to leave, and who can blame him? I think he took over a job that he thought was an exciting prospect. The UK was on the recover. The job looked really interesting. He was coming from the Bank of Canada, so maybe it was seen as a slightly bigger job. And how many people in Canada will have known who he is? How many people would have thought negatively of him? He was actually highly thought of, and instead he's come to the UK, and because of Brexit, he became villainized. He became the subject of Brexiteers' anger. And
Project Fear.
Exactly. And so this is not the job that I don't think he signed up for, and I think he's only stayed on as long as he has in a kind of sense of duty, which is, again, interesting. Again, it says probably a lot about his character in many ways, that he's, despite everything that's happened over the last couple of years, he's extended his stay beyond when he wanted to in a country where he's not going to live in the future. He's not originally from, just because of a sense of duty. So I think that's one thing we can take away. And I think he's actually handled the whole thing very well. I seem to be in the minority here, but I actually think he's handled the whole thing very well. And he's just entered an extremely polarized debate. And I've said this a few times. I don't think the fact that he's not English has helped his position in terms of being targeted by the Rees-Moggs and everything of this world. He was almost an easy target.
Cheap shots, weren't they?
Exactly. And we never heard his colleagues targeted either, nearly as much, especially so publicly.
I agree. I think he's done a pretty good job under the circumstances. Started off looking a bit like George Clooney. Now, I think the 16-hour days or whatever it is have taken their toll, haven't they?
Yeah, I hope he starts to look a lot healthier afterwards, Theresa May has. Ever since she announced that she was leaving, she's suddenly started to look like she can sleep again.
What about Philip Hammond?
Philip Hammond, there's not really too much to say about him, is there? I mean, if you want to look back in 5 years, what was his greatest achievement?
Well, he's overseen an austerity programme and just about kept it going, really. And now, of course, the levers are being loosened. He's not going to see that. So, equally, as with Carney, he's had a very, very tricky job. And I have to say, he's done a reasonable job, because he's had a very weak prime minister on the one hand, all the Brexiteers on the other, and he's been stuck in the middle.
He's kind of managed the process, I guess, but he's not had to do much, and he's not had much to do anything with.
The economy's in pretty good shape, though, isn't it, considering?
Reasonable, but I think that says probably a lot more about our economy than it does the way that it's being managed. He's not had to do the cuts that George Osborne had to do. He's not had to do the kind of growth stimulus that the next Prime Minister will have the opportunity to do.
He's just kind of
been that middle managing man who's just had to just tie things over. And that's, so therefore, I think he'll probably look back on this and go, I waited years for this role and I never had the opportunity to really do anything. Like I say, what would you say his greatest achievement was? I couldn't name one.
No, you got me there.
Yeah, exactly.
But
it's about time.
He's been a manager of a very, very difficult situation.
It's like a caretaker manager in football, I guess.
Yeah, and for that, we thank him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
You're not being very generous to poor old Philip Hammond, although I'm sure he'll be fine on the speaking circuit. Although, would you pay a lot of money to see?
He's not a great orator, is he?
Not really. As is,
I reckon he'll fall back to the back benches, and him and Theresa May will sit there feeling sorry for themselves for a few years.
Well, yeah, because she's going to stay on. Obviously, doesn't have another life. But before I let you go, let's look at some other events. UK and US GDP.
Yeah, so we got a little bit of data. I mean, I had to put this in here because let's face it, there's not enormous amount to talk about next week from the purely economic side. Of course, the geopolitical stuff is going to rumble on. The UK stuff is going to go a little bit quiet because now we're into that month of voting now. So we may hear the same reports every day, the little bit of batterings in the media, but there's not going to be anything hugely significant to talk about on that front. So looking at the more economic side, we've got US and UK GDP. Again, it's a revision, so it's not going to be a hugely significant release. We've got the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, but they cut interest rates fairly recently and didn't signal another cut in the near term. So again, it's just going to be a case of monitoring the progress and seeing how they are monitoring the actual economy and the need for further interest rates cuts maybe this year. And then we've got a few earnings, Nike, BlackBerry, H&M. I must admit, every time I see BlackBerry's name, I forget that they still exist.
And isn't it Nike? You say Nike. Is that a Liverpool thing?
I think it must be. I mean, since I've moved down south, everyone says Nike, and I think that sounds ridiculous. But apparently, that is how it's said. But I mean, I read it and I see Nike.
Yeah, and it's H&M, not ham, all right? Just a joke.
Yes, I think ham would sound better.
Craig, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll speak to you again same time next week.
Cheers.
That was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.